I'm George Kaler. This is TeaWithGeorge.com, and today's session of Get Real is with my regular guest, Professor Steve Putney, expert in Constitution, American history, and Old Testament. New Testament, too, I believe. I don't know how all that knowledge fits in one little head, but, well, it's a pretty big head if I keep talking about it. And also Diane Gruber, attorney out there on the left coast, and she's retired now, but she still keeps her thumb in it. She writes the most fabulous essays every day called America Reignite. And you can find Diane on, you can go to dianegruber.com or Diane Gruber on Substack. And I always look forward to what she has to say. This morning she was talking about the elimination of the one family home. And we'll get into that in a minute. Today's session is sponsored by the Kaler Wealth Management Group. Something we do, our very large life insurance policies. The people who want to equalize inheritances, let's say you have a family business and one child is in the business and two children aren't, how are you going to equalize that inheritance one day? Keep your kids talking to one another. Also, people use them to store cash. You can store an unbelievable amount of cash, no limits, in the cash values of a whole life policy. Good mutual whole life policy pays about the same interest rate as a high quality bond, but you get so much more with it. If you'd like to talk about that, I'm at 434-455-7197. Cloward Piven, they were professors at Columbia University, and they believed that a socialist dictatorship is actually the best way to govern, the best way for a culture. And we're going to be discussing that today. It seems that every tyrant in all of history thought they were doing the right thing. Even Hitler thought he was doing the right thing. And Cloward and Piven believed that socialism was the right thing. But here's the problem. How do you take a free country like America and make it into a socialist dictatorship? So, Diane, would you talk to us a little bit about Cloward Piven and who they were, what they believed, and the mischief that they've caused even long after they're gone. Diane Gruber, attorney.
Good morning, George and Steve. Piven, Frances Piven, is still with us, unfortunately, and I'll talk about her in a minute. Her husband, Richard Cloward, passed away in 2001. But they were Marxists, socialists. They were professors, and they are best known for their Cloward and Piven strategy to overwhelm. They originally wrote a thesis in 1966. We are suffering under their strategy right now, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But they wrote a thesis in 1966 where they wanted to overwhelm the welfare system by bringing in as many advertising and using community organizers and so forth, and bringing in as many welfare recipients as possible. So that, of course, would create chaos, which these people like chaos. And then the government would swoop in to control the chaos. And their ultimate goal was to implement communism through government force. They wanted, their immediate goal at that point was to make a guaranteed minimum income for everybody, and to remove the notion that people can work their way out of poverty, that by hard work, education, and so forth. They wanted those concepts of self-sufficiency wiped out. And their goal was to produce a climate of militancy by getting aggressive organizers out into the communities, bring in all these welfare recipients. Of course, they targeted blacks at that point. They called them Negroes then, but their main target was Negroes. They were somewhat successful. I found really interesting in my recent research is, at that time, the Democrats owned the White House, Lyndon Johnson. They owned the House, they owned the Senate. This was when LBJ was putting together his so-called Great Society, where he was going to suck money from families who needed it to raise their own children and give it to other people. But Cloward and Piven weren't happy with the progress of that socialist utopia. And so their goal in their writings was to force the Democrats to cave to their demands. They were focusing on the Democrats. And I find that interesting now in this current climate where jihadists and Hamas lovers and Jew haters and so forth are focusing on forcing Democrat Joe Biden to cave to their demands by militancy. And that's why they raided the House cafeteria, the Senate cafeteria yesterday, and said that nobody was allowed to eat unless children in Gaza got to eat, you know, that poppycock, and 50 people were arrested. If you think about just our lifetimes, the three of us, all of the radical pushes to destroy this system, to destroy that system, to cause constant chaos. When I look back my whole life, I've been involved in constant chaos. I mean, not personally, but I have watched constant chaos where the left is. Well, that's Cloward and Piven. And by the way, since Ms. Piven is still alive, she pokes her head out from under the rock every now and again, slithers out, make grand pronouncements. And she was just, she said early on in April of 2017, she demanded that she just loved all the chaos that the Democrats were creating to keep Trump from, governing effectively. And she rooted them on, cheered them on. And then when we had the Marxist BLM riots in 2020, she slithered out from under her rock and cheered them on. That's how you're going to make progress. Militancy, militancy, militancy. And she's in her 90s right now. I think she's 91, 92. But she's just as mean and nasty and hateful as she was when she wrote Cloward and Piven Strategy in 1966.
Diane, you know, she reminds me a little bit of George Soros, you know, the gift that just keeps on giving, and they're probably best friends. I want to interrupt here a second. Professor Steve Putney this morning is a speaker at our breakfast club. And this morning he talked about how socialism is almost the opposite side of the coin of Christianity and how the Church of Socialism works and the fervor. Now, most of us here in our listening audience are Christians. We follow the teachings of Christ. And they follow the teachings of Karl Marx. Steve, would you talk to us just a little bit about why is there such fervor on the part of the socialists to bring about a socialist dictatorship? It's like a religion, and it might be. Steve?
It is indeed a religion. It's not a theological religion of a singular God, a supernatural God. It's a naturalistic God, if you will, an anti-God. But it's a religion nonetheless. Karl Marx didn't think so. He called it scientific socialism, but there was nothing scientific about it. It was based on articles of faith. Progress is inherent in change. Nature acts dialectically, and so on. Anyway, you have to look at the life of Karl Marx. He was a Jew by birth, but his parents, and I put in quotes, converted to Protestantism, Lutherans, if you will, because they were in Prussia, because his dad was an attorney and wanted work, and he wouldn't receive any recognition unless he was a member of the state church. So they weren't what we might call biblical or evangelical Christians. They were nominal Christians at the very least, doing it for self-serving reasons alone. So Karl Marx understood Christianity. He grew up hearing that and was rewarded in high school. But something happened to Karl Marx after high school while he was a student at the University of Berlin, where he rejected all of that and bought into non-theistic, shall we say, philosophies. He fused together Hegel's dialectic and Ludwig Feuerbach's materialism, coming up with his own version, which he called dialectical materialism. And in terms of a comparison between communism, if you will, and Christianity. And as I said this morning, it's a point-by-point perversion. And here was the illustration that I gave. Dialectical materialism is the creator God of communism. Thesis, antithesis, and synthesis are its trinity. Private property is its original sin, or master evil, if you will. The proletariat is its chosen people. Revolution is its means of redemption. The writings of Marx and Engels are its scriptures. The Communist Party is its church, that is, the true believers. The violent overthrow of capitalism is its last judgment. and the withering away of the state in a classless brotherhood of peace is its millennium.
For everything that God has created good, the same Satan has a perfect counterfeit. It's almost like with heterosexual love. Counterfeit, homosexual love. The counterfeit to following Christ is following Marx. And it's just the exact opposite. Diane, why do you think it's so attractive that people would follow Marx? You're not a psychologist, but as an attorney, you've seen it all.
I don't think they think they're following Marxism. They have been so indoctrinated by, I would say, the school system, basically. I was watching a show the other night. It was a fiction. It was a Western. Somebody was talking. They were having this graduation ceremony from probably middle school. And the speaker was saying, bend the twig when it's young, or bend the tree when it's young. Come on. That's exactly what's happened. If the three of us can look back and we can tell how the tree has been bent generation by generation by generation. And now we have a whole, I would say two, probably three, maybe even four generations of people that can't reason. They have no logic. It's all emotion. Like those people screaming and hollering at the cafeteria, the Senate cafeteria yesterday. It was all emotion, no logic. Absolutely no reasoning involved there. It's all emotion. They have not been taught to sit down and think from A to B to C. If this, then that. It's all, yes, it's all that. It's what they believe. You're right. It's a church of sorts. It's a religion of sorts. You're quite right on that.
What you just described, I call linear thinking. Yeah, they're unable to do that. And maybe that's why socialism is so attractive to them and other really stupid people.
What was interesting in listening, researching Cloward and Piven's a little bit more leading up to this podcast, was the fact that they wanted to make the concept of working for your living an abstract notion amongst Black people. They were targeting Black people. They didn't want them working. They wanted them on the welfare. I wish I could find the exact quote, but I'm going, bingo. They were quite successful, were they not? And of course, also, they were successful in getting a lot of other races on the welfare train as well. Making work an abstract note, or no, working for a living would be an abstract notion. In other words, nobody knew how to do it. And they wanted generational welfare dependency. Not just to help out this particular person at this bad time in their life, hoping to build them up so they can get back into the workforce. They've been very, very successful, have they not?
You know, Diane, you talked about work. And from a biblical perspective, work is a form of worship. If you look in the Old Testament, in the book of Nehemiah, in the building of the wall, it says in chapter 4, people had a mind to work. And that even goes back into the first covenant in Genesis chapter 1, where God told Adam and Eve to be fruitful, multiply, and subdue the earth. That was work. That was worship.
You know, I saw a Facebook post by a sweet lady who's a Christian. She had a long diatribe on there. It wasn't from her. It was from some socialist who was trying to incorporate Jesus into the socialism, that Jesus never asked where people are from, or if they were there illegally. No, it was just to help them. I had to comment. Usually I don't comment on something like that, but I had to comment. I said, what did Jesus tell his disciples with the 5,000 hungry people? He said, you feed them. He didn't say, go vote for some generous politician, generous with other people's money. I said, that's called cheap grace. It doesn't cost you anything to look holy, but God sees through all of that. I got some mean replies on that. Well, our democratic form of government, we can vote for that. Well, it doesn't make it right. As a matter of fact, Alexis de Tocqueville said that democracy will last only until the people find out they can vote themselves benefits from other people's work. Steve.
And Friedrich Bastiat, in his book, The Law, written about 1850, called that legalized plunder. If you, George, stole from me to give to Alberto, you probably would go to jail.
Alberta would be in favor of it.
Well, absolutely. But if we voted and I was outvoted and you won the vote, you could legally take it from me and give it to him. But it's plunder nonetheless.
Diane, I want to talk a little bit more about Claude Piven, but I have to incorporate this morning on how I was so impressed with your column on the family home, the one family home. And why is it that our government wants to put people into enclaves, so to speak, high-rise apartments or whatever, get them out of the one-family home? Talk to us about that.
I can answer that question in one word: control. They want to control us. They want us in government housing, just like the Section 8 housing all these many years that we've had that. They controlled the people that lived there, did they not? They were not their own person because they had to do what the government told them to do to get their welfare benefits and to keep their Section 8 housing. And so they did not have freedom of movement. They didn't have freedom of choice. Now, a lot of these people, they love that. They didn't want to work. It's all about control. They want to get you off the land. And I don't mean necessarily farmland. I just mean if you own a city lot with your house sits on it, then that's your land, right? They want you have the freedom to come and go. That's your property. You can tell other people you can't come on my property and so forth. They want to get rid of that. They want to get rid of the notion that people own their own land and their own home. I mean, just like, well, think about it. If you rent a home, you don't have the freedom to do what you want with it the way you do with your own home. Well, the government owns the house and, or I should say, the apartment, the little teeny nook that you live in. So you have to do what the government says. It's all about control. And that's why they want you out of your car too, because they stick you in these, some people call them human kennels because they're going to be so small and there's going to be so many people packed in there. They want you out of your car too, because to limit your freedom of movement, stick you in public transportation. And of course, if you think about it, they're already been talking about vaccine passports a few years ago. And if you didn't have a vaccine passport, you wouldn't be allowed on public transportation. Now, they were talking about airplanes and trains and buses, but the same could apply to local transportation as well. It's all about control.
COVID vaccine passport. I'm glad I didn't get the shot. Another friend of mine died last week. He had three shots and a booster and died. And that would be the sixth friend of mine now that died after the shots and the boosters. Mm-hmm. And
I know one person who died right after their shot.
It just makes me so mad because the people who are dying, they were doing the right thing. The government told them, hey, you need to get the shot. And also there was all kinds of pressure on them. Hey, you are a danger to society if you don't get the shot because you'll be passing COVID. All of that was a lie, but we didn't know it was a lie at the time. The only reason I didn't get the vaccine was because the epidemiologist who goes on trips with me to Africa told me, he said, don't get the shot, George. It's not a true vaccine. I said, are you getting it? He said, absolutely not. By the way, a shout out to one of my doctors in Africa. I've been supporting a number of doctors through medical school in Uganda. And Sam Omara graduated last Saturday, and he's going to not only be a surgeon, but he's a teaching surgeon in the hospital. And so he's going to make a big mark on the world. Besides, he's a Christian. He's going to be leading people to Christ, hopefully. Yeah. So healing people both spiritually and physically. I'm really proud of Sam. Sam, if you're listening, thank you for your hard work getting through school. Steve, let's continue this. Why are socialists so fervent? Now, you talked about they have a religious fervor and how socialism is like the counterfeit of Christianity.
They are committed. They are true believers. And a true believer has surrendered themselves to the God that they serve. And socialism, i.e. communism, is the ideology, the God, if you will, that they serve. They're willing to die for what they believe, just like a true Christian. And you can look at throughout history at many Christians that have given their lives for the cause of Christ. These folks are willing to give their lives for the cause of communism. They've never achieved communism, Now, we talk about Russia, former Soviet Union, or China. I prefer calling it Red China, and we used to call it that, you remember? The party members are committed to that belief system, and they're willing to sacrifice their lives, and many of them have, for the cause of what they believe. Can I go back to what Diane was talking about just a moment? Diane, when you're talking about the movement to restrict people in private ownership of either cars or land, it made me think of one of Karl Marx's 10 planks, the abolition of private property, and that you're absolutely right. It leads to control, which made me think of a Scottish historian of the late 19th century. His name was Alexander Francis Tyter. And here's what he wrote, the nine phases of a culture of society. They go from bondage to spiritual faith, and from spiritual faith to great courage, from courage to liberty, from liberty to abundance, 20th century America, if you will, from abundance to selfishness, the meism culture of the 1970s, if you will, from selfishness to complacency. Just give me personal peace and affluence. I don't care what happens. From complacency to apathy. From apathy, and here's where you are, Diane, when you're talking about the great society. From apathy to dependency. And yes. Dependency leads right back to bondage.
Oh, absolutely. We're right on the cusp. And while we're talking about Clouard and Piven's strategy, although they focused on the welfare state, they wanted to create socialism, communism, they also liked the idea of flooding the borders, bringing in untold numbers of foreign nationals into America, because that would really collapse the welfare state. The last few years, she's given a couple of speeches, talks, where she's very excited about bringing as many legals and illegals as possible just to flood the whole system and collapse it. And that's what we're looking at now. Not only is the immigration system collapsed, intentionally, but that is leading to collapse of other systems. It's collapsing healthcare systems. I'm assuming it's going to, if it hasn't already, collapse some of the public school systems in the areas where there's a lot, illegals moving in with their children. You can't add another 10, 20, 30% of children in school from 1 year to the next, increase right from 1 year to the next. Even if they all spoke English and had come from other schools and had decent education so far.
But Diane, look at the relationship to when Clouard and Piven postulated their strategy in 1966. What had happened just the year before with the Immigration Act of 1965? We destroyed, I should say.
Oh, yes, and they loved that, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And they loved that. They talked about that. They just loved it because they knew it was going to bring in all kinds of people, legally, for the most part, from non-English-speaking countries.
Right, non-European countries, people that didn't share the same cultural values that people of the United States did.
And look at what's going on, for example, in Dearborn. I mean, that's just one example. I mean, we rescued all of these Muslims from, I forgot the name of the country, when it collapsed into a civil war in the 90s. We brought all these people in, tried to take care of them, give them a good life. And what are they doing? They've got rallies where their speakers are talking death to America.
Yes.
And I say, if you don't like America, move back home. No, they want to destroy America.
It's time for another series of Palma raids. After World War I in 1919, when they rounded up all the Reds, all the communists, and deported them.
Oh, I hope so. I hope so. And just start with MS-13, the Venezuelan gangs. Start with the people that came out of the prisons in the various countries and came. I mean, it's really going to be really easy. He can do a triage. Just get rid of all of the ones that have criminal records in their own country. The ones with MS-13 tattooed on their chest. This should be really simple. And just go down from there. I mean, before you get down to just, the mother and the father with a couple of kids that are otherwise law-abiding, that are trying to contribute to America, leave them alone. Maybe he's got plenty to work with, that's for sure. Millions and millions to get rid of.
You know, the civil body politic can be compared to the human body. If you're sick, as a human and you go to the doctor and he says, well, you have cancer, cancer of the colon, let's say, for example, what is he going to recommend you do? Cut it out. You have to do the same thing in the civil body politic.
We're running out of time here, Steve and Diane. You're two of the most fascinating people I know. It's such an honor to have you as my co-host here on Get Real. To our listening audience, we're not in every state. If you would like to send this to your friends, go to tewithgeorge.com, Get Real, and send the link to your friends that you think would benefit by knowing what we know and now what you know. I appreciate so much everyone listening to this. May God bless your day. Goodbye, Steve and Diane, and goodbye to our listening audience. Thanks for listening. This is George Kaler. Thank you for listening to Get Real. Professor Putney has left the studio, and attorney Diane Gruber out there in Washington State has signed off on her Zoom account with me, and I'm all alone talking with you. This program is sponsored by my clients of the Kaler Group Wealth Management, who do business with me. And if you would like to have a one-minute advertisement that would be aired in your area, give me a call and we'll make that happen. 434-455-7197. And if you'd like to do some business with me, that also subsidizes this program.